In 2013, John Bushnell and his family bought the old Pahiatua convent buildings and shifted them to a site in rural Greytown. Shortly after the completion of the renovations in early 2016, members of the Pahiatua community and nuns of the Brigidine Order were invited to celebrate the building's stunning transformation from convent to an elegant and comfortable family home. This is a short audio record of that day and the story of a much-loved building that has been given a new lease of life.
I'm John Bushnell. The first time I encountered the building was when I was visiting Amy, and she pointed out an advert in just one of the local throwaway papers, a little two-line advert. And it was around about a point where we'd decided to come home from Australia, where we'd lived for the last 10 years. And we had been looking around Greytown because it was close to where Amy and Hayden and Theo were living, but not completely in their laps. And we were having trouble finding any house that was really not much more than a small worker's cottage. So we had come to the idea that maybe it would be a good idea if we actually looked at moving a building. And suddenly this just happened coincidentally at the right time. So we went up and had a look at the building, and I just fell in love with it. I thought it was fantastic.
Hey, my name is Amy Bushnell, and I saw the convent advertised in the local newspaper a couple of years ago. And my dad and Liz were looking to move to the Wairarapa and hadn't had much luck finding a house. So they started thinking about maybe relocating an old building. So he was over for a visit, and I told him about it, and the tender closed on the following Thursday. So we went up that weekend and up to Pahiatua and had a look at the place and thought it was amazing, and had a conversation that we'd probably never find anything better to relocate. So we took lots of photos and rang Liz in Australia and told her about it, and she gave him the go-ahead to do it, sight unseen, and they put in their offer and they got the place. It had been well loved, but it looked like it could do with a fresh face, quite dated, had lots of little single bedrooms, obviously because there'd been nuns there, they were quite small rooms, so we were looking at how you could turn it into a family home, because it was obviously set up for a different use. After it had been a convent, they'd used it as a refugee settling centre, so people moved to Pahiatua and lived there before they went out in the community.
So whereabouts was it in Pahiatua for people who
it was right behind the Catholic Church, attached to the grounds at the back, and they were selling it off so that they could put in a whole lot of retirement homes, so for older people in the community. So the church had decided to sell it off and reuse that land. So when they bought the place, they managed to buy, I think, about 8 pews to come with it, and they've recycled those in the house. So they've got about a 3 metre long dining table, and that's made out of pews from the chapel. And they've added on the accommodation wing that was added to the building in the 1920s and had what adjoining piece of building, and the steps in there have been made out of pews as well.
When you first arrived to see the building, did you get good feelings immediately?
Yeah, we did. It had beautiful big verandas, and you could just imagine it being, you know, sited for the sun and having drinks outside, and, you know, it's lovely old joinery, and the chapel was amazing. It had stained glass windows in it, but families in Pahiatua had donated those to the chapel, so they weren't part of the sale. So all the windows had kind of a textured glass and you couldn't see out of, so one of the first things that we thought you'd need to do is put clear glass in so you could actually see out.
As well as the pews, some other historical artefacts have made the move from the convent's old home in Pahiatua to Greytown, including a plaque to commemorate the convent's beginnings early last century.
Yeah, that was on there, so they've kept a few bits and pieces that have got some kind of historic feel to them, so that they're still part of the fabric of the building. It's the Brigidine Convent in Paihiatua, and it was opened by Dean O'Shea, the Vicar General of the Wellington Archdiocese, on Sunday, 8th of December 1912. So I think they bought this place in 2013, so it must have been around its 100th birthday that they gave it a new lease of life and moved it to Greytown.
Mid-December we moved the building down, although it's terrifying to look at these huge buildings teetering on the back of a truck. It clearly is something these guys do day and night, and they left at sunset from Paihiatua and eventually arrived down here about 4 a.m. Planted the buildings on the land, disappeared at that stage, and but by 7 o'clock the next morning, just a few hours later, they were back putting the houses in place where we'd marked it out, and it only took them a couple of days to complete the process of putting in all the piles and vast amounts of concrete and completing the process of the houses resting where it is now. It's in fantastic condition. It had been really well looked after. It had been built well with excellent materials and built on concrete foundations. So it had been dry, re-roofed relatively recently, I think something like maybe 15 or 20 years ago. So it was a building that had been looked after and taken care of and built with really top quality timber throughout. And as we pulled off all of the kind of 1950s additions and linings that were used in that time, you could see the original materials just completely untouched by age, really. Whilst in places it was a little like one of these archaeology programs where you can actually see the history of the building and the floor and the structure, when the structure was imposed. In this room, for example, there are patches in the floor which areas where there were corner fireplaces here and in the room next door, which came down in the 1934 Paihiatua earthquake. The earthquake went that direction through the roof of the hallway, took the hallway ceiling out, and we could actually see all the evidence of that as the building was stripped back. You could kind of unpick what had been happening to it throughout its life. We did have help from a very good architect, particularly in the early days at a sort of conceptual level, and talk with her about how we deal with the issue of how to orient the building. It had been designed and built, perhaps unusually for its time, but actually built to the sun, with the front door and the verandas facing the sun. With the reconstruction that we've done to the space on the north, what is now the north side of the building where we actually live, the logical place was actually to turn the building around, face the front door south, and have the living space on the sunny side of the building. And that's worked extremely well. It creates sheltered spaces around the east, west, and even the south side of the building under the verandas, and gives us maximum sunlight and creates kind of lovely warm space in a building that, one downside, is not a warm house. The ceilings vary between 3.6 meters and 4.2 meters, so any heat that's generated immediately goes to the top of any room that you're in, and it does take a lot of heating to keep it warm enough to live in.
You've got radiators though.
Yes, so we put central heating in sort of as a absolutely necessary prerequisite to making it livable. Couldn't imagine living here. Well, I can imagine actually the first winter we were here in the middle of the building site. We had no heating at all for several months. And it really is a very cold house unless you're pouring heat into it from somewhere. The renovation phase of it is finished. And we're now really looking forward to getting on with the landscaping. So we have 6 acres of land around us. We've made a few tentative bits of planting to start and done quite a bit of work on planning what we want to happen where. But it's a fairly labour-intensive process, and I'm probably going to have to live for at least another 100 years in order to see the garden completed to the way that it should look in my head.
About your association with this building. What's your name, first of all?
Joan Glacey.
Hello.
And my brother-in-law and sister looked after it. There's been hours and hours and hours and years and years on the parish centre. When she died, I took over for long and did the bookings and cleaned the centre and washed endless sheets. But I loved every moment of it, you know. And then my husband, I just said, I'm 91 next week, so it's all it's sort of got a bit beyond me, But no, it's just so wonderful to come back and see this. Lovely.
So you live in Paihiatua.
Yes, I lived in Paihiatua.
And how did you feel when the place went up for sale?
Sad. It was just so sad the night it went, but it's so delightful knowing that it's gone here. And we've had the privilege of coming down here today to see it, and I've looked forward to this for months and months. Yeah, you know, it's been really, really, really great.
And what do you think about what the Bushnells have done?
Pardon?
What do you think about what they've done to
the building? Oh, well, I've only just sort of walked in. It's just amazing. I said, and beautiful when you walk and, you know, drive up the drive, it still looks like the church and the parish centre, but it's totally different, and yet it's still the same, if you know what I mean. Yeah. So it's just wonderful. Yeah.
You've spoken to my mum.
Who's your mum?
My mum's Joan Glacey.
Oh, yeah, she's gorgeous.
And I said to her, what did you tell her? And I said, because I was just going to tell you about all the parties we used to have in this place.
Oh.
We had my mother's 70th birthday party there. We had my mum and dad's 60th wedding anniversary there. And we've got quite a large extended family. So we used to have some fun times here.
Oh.
You know, we'd have a big lunch and or even a dinner, you know.
Yep.
Big table in the dining room, and yeah.
It was so you've got some really lovely memories.
We have, yes. And of course I went to St. Anthony's School, so, you know, as a child this was next door where the nuns lived in it, so it was a bit of a scary place to go to then.
Did the nuns do teaching?
Yes.
They did.
Yep,
so
yeah. In fact, one of my teachers is here today.
I have to find her. That'd be the perfect
yes.
family tree.
Yeah.
What? Can you remember some of the names of your teachers?
I had the one that's here is Sister Cyprian. I had Sister Bridget. There was a mother. Her name was Mother Carthridge. She was a bit old. She sort of taught my older brother and sister. That's all I can remember at the
That's
moment.
Right. Yeah. Can you remember what it was like to be taught by nuns? Is it quite different from being taught by...
I don't know, because that was all
that
I
was
even...
All
yes,
right.
Yeah, I mean, went through to the, you know, the Catholic school until I went to college, so
right.
yeah, it was just what we knew, and yeah,
were they,
they were pretty tough.
No one can imagine.
And back in those days, of course, if you misbehaved, you got a whack across the knuckles, or, you know, so.
Yes. You were a good student.
Of course. Of course I was. I actually got a prize in Standard 2 for religious education, so there you go.
Well done, top of the class.
Yeah.
And what do you think about, you know, the transformation of this
building? Oh, it's beautiful. It's beautiful. And, I mean, it's nice to see that it's been used, you know, rather than, I mean, it was used in Paetua because the community used to use it, but I think, you know, when they sold it, it could have just been sold and or demolished, but at least it's been well used and still well loved. Yeah. Yeah.
And what was your name?
My name's Glenys Holmes.
Thank you, Glenys. That's all right. Now, I understand this man's family bequeathed the Delahunty room. Thanks very much for colouring me. That's, I really appreciate that. I know you might be trying to get away from me because I've got this, but I understand that you're a Delahunty.
That's right.
And might be responsible for the Delahunty room.
Well, one of my uncles was, yes.
Yeah. What's your name?
My name's John. John Delahunty, yeah. And I had three uncles in town. Two uncles in town, neither of them were married. So there was Jim, who was an old farmer, and Pat, who was a dentist in Paiatua. And they had I had an auntie Kitty who lived there. She was a dowager aunt as well. And when she died, she left some money to them. And that's how the Delahunty room came about. And there was another Delahunty, he was a Maris brother over in, but he was in Fiji and lived in Suva for most of his life as a Maris brother. And his picture was actually in the Delahunty room, but I snivelled that when I sold it to you and I brought it home, you see.
And what was the Delahunty room used for back when?
That was just a meeting room, yes. That's all. It hadn't actually been there that long. It was only after the nuns left that it became the Delahunty room. Yes. So it was, yeah, it's all. It was, you know, quite good. Yeah.
And are you born and bred in Paiatua?
Yes.
Yep. And you still live there now?
Yes. Yeah.
And were you sad to see the convent go?
Oh, I was, yeah. As kids, we used to, when we went to Mass on a Sunday morning, we used to have to go to catechism lists because I never went to the common school. And we were country folk, she said, we used to have catechism lessons there, and the nuns would come and teach us on Sunday mornings after Mass.
Now, I'm Phil Cotter. I live about 5 miles out of Paiatua. I didn't go to the convent school, but I went to the convent itself to learn music from Mother Antony and Mother Baptist, and then the violin from Mother Antony, and I ended up playing. I was a leader at the Silver Stream Orchestra later on, so she drummed it into me with occasional whack across the knuckles when I didn't practice hard enough and I wasn't any better next week than I was last week. It was another part where we used to go in for Sunday school after Mass at the school, and you get growled at because you were barefoot. But we were barefoot during the war and after the war because, you know, shoes were a luxury. You wore them on special occasions. And the nuns couldn't believe that we didn't have slippers like all the other pupils.
Father Cyprian, can I ask you a question? I've just noticed, I've been looking at the lovely brooch.
St. Bridget's Cross.
St. Bridget's Cross. Yes. What was St. Bridget famous for?
Well, she was in the early days of the church in Ireland. She and St. Patrick worked to bring the faith to Ireland. And she was the one who started off monasteries and places like that where they could be taught. And if you go to Ireland, you'll find all sorts of churches there, St. Bridget's Church, especially in Kildare. And that's where our sisters started off. They started at a place called Tullow. And we were named after the Bridgetine sisters because we were supposed to carry on the work St. Bridget did. So they started off, we started off as a little group teaching and spread all over around the world. So,
how many St. Bridgetine sisters are there in New Zealand?
Well, there are only 10 of us now. We used to have 50 or 60 of us, but of course we've all died off.
Is anybody new coming up through the ranks?
No, well, very few. Very few. But and then most of them are a little bit older when they come, right. You know, kind of.
I've just noticed in the middle of your St. Bridget's Cross, there's...
It's a little flame of learning, you know, it was like a little lamp. So they put it in, because we were teachers. That's what we started off as.
Oh, how gorgeous. Thank you. You're welcome. I'm filling in the blanks.
Yes, I was here long time ago. I was in Baiatua.
And so you used to live in the
Yes,
Congress.
I lived here, yes.
Mm-hmm. How many years did you live?
Well, I only lived here a short time each time. I came and I was here for a year or two, and then I went up to Auckland and I came back again and spent some more time here. Taught over in the little old St. Anthony School. And I taught music in that music room up there.
And how old were you when you became a nun?
18. And I'm 91 now.
You're not.
I am, yes.
You're fabulous.
That's a long time ago.
What, had you always wanted to become a nun?
I did.
You did?
Always, yes. When I first met the Bridgetine sisters, when I was just a little girl at school.
And you knew it was for you?
I did. Yes.
So you have happy memories of living in this building?
Very much. And I was just looking out there, all those verandas, you know, we used to go out there, when it'd be very hot, we'd go out and say our prayers sitting out on the veranda, or I'd go and read a book. It used to be lovely. I loved the verandas.
Sister Helena Fui, I am a Bridgetine sister, and the Bridgetines in New Zealand had a lot of influence for me all my life. They were just so natural and normal and loving and caring and welcoming, and at that stage I didn't, as a little girl, as I said earlier on, I can claim to be the first one of anybody in this room to have been in that convent, because the day I was baptised, I was taken from the church over to see the nuns. And I was all of two weeks and 2 days old. And that was on the 9th of December 1923, which is a fair stretch ago. But I loved the nuns. And one of the sisters there in particular, Sister Gerard, she was an Aussie and just absolutely the most delightful person out. And when we would go to town, my mother always took what we called the nun's box. And in the nun's box, there would be fresh eggs and fresh homemade scones and meat and milk and cream and whatever else was around to put in it. Because at that stage, it was the Depression. And it wasn't until I came back to New Zealand as a nun. I mean, it never occurred to me as a kid. You didn't think about the Depression. We were fortunate. We lived on a farm. We had our own everything. So the Depression, for me as a child, didn't really touch me. But when I came back, some of the nuns said to me, we used to say on a Tuesday morning, thank God Mrs. Fui will be in today. Because we knew we would have milk, we would have meat, we would have cream, and we would have anything else she had. And she said many a time we had nothing until she came. And you didn't realise that, because everybody was in the same boat, I suppose, but because we were out in the country. And that was just the way it was.
Been opening the doors to all these wonderful people who've had such an association?
Well, it's been lovely. I've been rushing around so fast, I haven't had as much time as I'd like to actually talk to them, but I'm sure that that association won't just end today, and that some of them have been particularly enjoyable work in the sisters who lived here. So we have four of them visiting us today, and that's really nice. It's and it's great to be able to talk to them about what memories they have of how this building worked, and to also to see the way in which it was clearly an important part of the Pahitua community. I think that's perhaps in part down to the building, but also obviously very much down to the way in which the Bridgeting Sisters actually played a vitally important role in that community. It's clear that for this community, these people who were here in a pastoral role for that community were really important and very much loved, and it's really nice to feel that we have a connection to that kind of history.